We now have our feature interview, a much-anticipated U.S.-Africa summit at the State Department and the White House in the U.S. was held from August 4th to the 8th. Dozens of African heads of state and the chair of the African Union Commission attended. Nonetheless, several leading countries were not invited or chose not to attend, including Zimbabwe, Sudan, Eritrea, Chad, Egypt, as well as Liberia and Sierra Leone. To speak to us about the U.S.-Africa Summit is Abeyume Azikwe. Abeyume is the editor of the Pan-African Newswire. The Pan-African Newswire is an international electronic press service designed to foster intelligent discussion on the affairs of African people throughout the continent and the world. Good afternoon, Abeyume.
Good afternoon to you.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine.
Thanks again for joining us. Of course, for our regular listeners, you'll know Abeyume is a regular contributor to the show, especially in regards to U.S. African foreign affairs. So thanks again, and as always, to have you on the show. It's been great. So can you just start by telling us about the U.S.-Africa Summit? What is it? And as I'd mentioned in the intro, some countries were not invited, others chose not to come. Can you tell us a bit about the politics behind that?
Well, it's not clear exactly what it is. It was the first summit that's been convened of this nature. We believe it is a response to the growing intervention of the People's Republic of China, Iran, Japan, the countries of South America with the African continent, that the United States is largely focused on a militarist and also economically exploitative relationship with the African Union member states. It's also important to note that the criteria for participation in this summit that took place earlier this month was not determined by the African Union, the officially recognized regional organization that has 54 states that are a part of it. They did not set the terms for participation. So consequently, the president of Zimbabwe, the president of the Republic of Sudan, the state of Eritrea, the Central African Republic, and some other states did not attend. Now, they are saying that Liberia and Sierra Leone leaders did not attend because of the Ebola disease crisis that has hit those countries. It's also important to note that the participants from numerous states were required to be screened prior to entering the United States and participating in this summit at the State Department and the White House, screened for the Ebola virus. So the outbreak of Ebola somehow overshadowed the summit. The summit, in our opinion, was an attempt to buy goodwill on the part of the United States vis-a-vis the African continent in relationship to developments in the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation, which has held five summits between 2000 and 2012, and we could also cite the Africa-South America Summit and other gatherings, including the Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa Summit, which introduced South Africa as a member in 2012. These entities are mainly focusing on trade and other types of South-South cooperation, whereas the main thrust of the United States intervention in Africa, not only under the Obama administration, but even in the prior Bush administration, has been a militarist intervention. The United States Africa Command was formed in early 2008 officially, and that was under the Bush administration. And since the advent of the Obama administration, funding and operational activities of the U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM, has been strengthened and enhanced. So therefore, we feel this is an effort to somewhat reshape the image of Africa-U.S. relations, but in substance, it remains fundamentally the same, because there was a tremendous amount of discussion during this summit that focused on the so-called war on terrorism.
And as you had mentioned briefly, that these kinds of summits have been going on. More in the South-South kind of relationship, especially with China. You said that the Chinese summit has reached its fifth year, and this is the first time that the Africa, that the U.S. has been hosting a summit. And in a way, it's obvious that they are trying, and as you mentioned, to counter the growth of Chinese investment and Chinese interest in Africa. Can you tell us maybe a bit, and it has, of course, that militaristic, I mean, anything the U.S. does have this militaristic angle, but can you tell us a bit about that kind of tension and that kind of discourse that surrounds, you know, a new Chinese imperialism or a new Chinese colonialism, and how the U.S. and maybe even Europe is trying to counter that?
Well, there was a summit earlier this year in Brussels, Belgium, called the European Union Africa Summit, which also the terms for participation was set in Brussels, not in Addis Ababa, where the African Union is based. The African Union headquarters there was built by the engineers and architects from the People's Republic of China. And most commentators who have examined and studied and done research on the character relations between the People's Republic of China and the African Union member states say that these relations are far better than those of the traditional relations between Europe as well as the United States vis-a-vis Africa. Yes, there's been a heavy militarist tone in the recent years as it relates to Africa. Just to give an example, the AMISOM forces, the African mission, African Union mission to Somalia, which has been in existence now for over 7 years. This operation has officially 22,000 African troops that are present in Somalia under the guise of propping up the Somali federal government. These operations are financed by the United States and the European Union. The troops from Sierra Leone, from Uganda, from Burundi, and other states that comprise AMISOM are trained by the United States and the European Union. The Central Intelligence Agency has a field station in Somalia. They also have, they serve as a base for the conducting of drone operations, not only in Somalia, but into Ethiopia and even as far as the Seychelles in the Indian Ocean. There are other areas on the African continent where the United States is enhancing its military presence in the Gulf of Guinea off the coast of West Africa, which is a large producer of oil as well as natural gas. The United States has conducted numerous military maneuvers and training operations with various neocolonial dominated African states in the western region of the continent. Mm-hmm. There are over three dozen states on the African continent that the United States has deployed special forces and military trainers along with the Central Intelligence Agency and State Department operatives in order to supposedly wage this war on terrorism. But what we've seen objectively is that the degree to which these African states have enhanced their security and intelligence operations with the U.S., and with the European Union military forces, the degree of instability and destabilization in these states have escalated. Mali is a great example. They had heavy involvement in the Malian military leading up to the coup that was led by Aminu Sinoko in March of 2012. We've seen the same situation in Nigeria, where now the CIA and special forces have a growing presence in the West African state of Nigeria. By the way, proclaimed now as having a leading economy on the African continent. Instability is still rife in Nigeria, particularly in the Northeast. They have not been able to stem the destabilization efforts of the Boko Haram sect, as well as other problems that exist, regional problems in the West African state of Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Those are some examples of how this burgeoning relationship has not stabilized Africa.
But yet, in a public statement during the summit, the AU Commissioner Chair, Dr. Kosanza Dlamini Zuma, suggested that the U.S. was not fully aware of the developments in Africa and warned that if Washington did not engage with the continent, then they would effectively be losers in the future character of relations. So what does she mean by this? That we see on the one hand, there's clearly a very sophisticated U.S. Military presence on the continent, while the AU Commissioner Chair, Dr. Zuma, is saying that the U.S., in fact, is not aware of what's going on in the United States. So where are her comments coming from?
Well, she's walking a very fine line. What we have in Africa today, and what Kwame Nkrumah talked about nearly 50 years ago in his book, Neocolonialism, The Last Stage of Imperialism, that the United States is the number one imperialist power today, impacting the foreign and domestic policy of the African continent, and that the focus of the African heads of state, mass organizations, and political parties should be to curtail United States interference on the African continent. This has not been successful over the last five decades. We've had numerous political and military coup d'etats that have been instigated by the CIA and the State Department and their allies within the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, and that is continuing today. So consequently, when she says that they don't understand what is going on, she's speaking to the fact that they're attempting to control Africa and remake modern African politics and foreign relations in the image of United States imperialism, but at the same time, it's doomed to failure, because the United States objectively really has nothing to offer Africa in any real sense. The United States itself is suffering from the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. Even here inside the United States, we see that the African-American people and other nationally oppressed groups and even large segments of the white working class and middle class population are suffering unprecedented levels of unemployment, underemployment, poverty, and other forms of deprivation. Just look at what is going on in Ferguson, Missouri, over the last 8 days, where the African-American community, largely led by youth, have been in rebellion against police terrorism carried out against African-American youth, with the murder of Michael Brown, with the utilization of military tactics against protesters in the African-American community in Ferguson. The Pentagon is, in fact, giving away surplus military equipment to local police authorities throughout the United States. We're talking about Humvees. We're talking about vehicles that are used to counter improvised explosive devices. We're talking about tear gas, bean bags, concussion bombs, rubber bullets, high-powered assault rifles that are being deployed against the African community here in the United States. So what, based upon this history and contemporary developments, what does the Pentagon and the State Department really have to offer Africa except greater militarism, greater exploitation of the extractive industries in Africa, oil, natural gas, and other forms of minerals? This is the real agenda of the United States, and it's an unsustainable agenda. So what she's saying is speaking to the contradictions that exist on the African continent today.
And just in terms of that and the summit, the militarization, and also the funding of militarization, right? Because during the U.S.-Africa summit, the U.S. pledged money to France for their operations in West Africa. I can't remember the amount, but it's a staggering amount of money, like in the millions of dollars, to assist the French invasion and occupation of positions in West Africa. So can you tell us a bit more about that money and about the French operation in West Africa?
They claimed that they were going to give $10 million to France to enhance its capacity to occupy particularly the northern and central regions of the West African state of Mali. France has been in Mali directly since January of 2013. They claimed when they went in to beat back the Islamist groups that had intervened in northern Mali in an attempt to seize control from the Western-backed government in that West African state, that it would only last for a few weeks or perhaps a few months. Here we are over a year and a half later, and the French have not left Mali. They've intervened even more so in the Central African Republic. They've had commando units that have gone into Somalia as well. So this is a collective imperialism in terms of what Kwame Nkrumah talked about in the aforementioned book, Neocolonialism, The Last Stage of Imperialism. He said that there would be a collective imperialism that was headed and commanded by the United States. So even France, when it intervenes in Mali and the Central African Republic, it has the tactical, military, diplomatic, and intelligence support of the Pentagon, Central Intelligence Agency, and the State Department. We saw this in Mali. It was the United States warplanes that were flying in French soldiers, supplying weapons to the French military. In the Central African Republic, for at least 3 years now. They have had special forces in operation in the Central African Republic. So it's a collective imperialism, and therefore the U.S. publicly announced that they were going to continue this entire process. Now, many of these so-called Islamist groups that are functioning in Mali and in other parts of the African continent, and indeed even in the Middle East, these are groups who periodically have been supported by the United States. I mean, look at Afghanistan. Who destabilized Afghanistan beginning in 1979? It was the Carter administration of the United States that was attempting to overthrow the People's Democratic Party, the socialist government in Afghanistan. People have to remember that for the last 35 years, the United States has been at the heart of the destabilization of Afghanistan. They, in fact, provided tactical support for the founding of the Al-Qaeda network. Now they have identified Al-Qaeda as a major enemy. In Libya, they supported Al-Qaeda, an Al-Qaeda type and allied organizations to overthrow the government of Colonel Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. In Syria, they have utilized groups such as the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, ISIL, which is now known as the Islamic State. They provided weaponry and tactical support to those groups in order to fight against the government of Bashar al-Assad. And the fact that they were not able to be successful, now the Islamic State has intervened and taken over huge swaths of territory in northern Iraq. And now what is going on, the United States has turned against these same elements that they had supported over the last several years in Syria. Now they claim they are the targets of aerial bombardments, special forces operations, and so-called humanitarian relief to victimize groups in northern Iraq, which are real and which are legitimate. But it is the United States itself, through its disjointed, confused, opportunistic, and exploitative foreign policy, that is fostering destabilization throughout the Middle East, throughout Africa, throughout Central Asia, and other parts of the world. So this is the critical contradiction in world affairs today, and that is the attempt by the United States through Washington and Wall Street to dominate world affairs.
And we talked about this briefly in the beginning, but this is not the only kind of foreign relations that Africa has, right? We talked about this kind of growing South-South partnership that the continent has with increasingly Latin America, with for a long time now with China. You know, yes. We could also think about South Africa and BRICS, and et cetera. So mm-hmm. if I have one, I guess, really specific question, sorry for flipping back and forth, but this Africa Summit's very much a way to counter the influence of China on the continent. And there's a lot being made, right, of this yellow peril, this new imperialism, this new colonialism. Where does China stand in terms of foreign investment in Africa, in terms of, you know, exploitation of resources on the continent? There's a lot being made in the media about how China's increasing their commercial relations with the continent, but I think in, if I'm not mistaken, that the trade relations with the continent are still highest with Europe and the U.S. And when I say trade relations, of course, they're not equal trade relations. It's more of an exploitative relationship. So can you tell us where, in a sense, China sits in that and how these kind of, you know, what I'm calling the yellow pearl on the African continent is more of a myth than it is a reality of trade?
Well, the whole idea of a yellow pearl came out of U.S. foreign policy during the Cold War period, so we have to keep that in mind. They've always been threatened by the revolution in China in 1949, and of course, the character of relations between China and Africa is far different than the character of relations between the United States and Africa and Western Europe and Africa. China is not an imperialist country. China historically was a semi-colonial and colonial state under Britain and later under U.S. domination after World War II. And the Chinese Revolution, led by Mao Zedong and the others, served as a tremendous blow to the post-World War II aims and objectives of the United States. And there is, in fact, a growing interest and involvement of China with Africa. Africa is the largest trading partner right now vis-a-vis its economic relations with China. However, the United States still, through its military operations and intelligence operations, are still dominating the majority of the states on the African continent. And this is what people have to keep in mind. So there's a struggle going on right now. It's a global struggle for hegemony. And of course, even though the United States still has tremendous economic relations with China, they do not wish China well. And China is the second largest economy in the world. It's still a state-directed economy, even though it does have enterprise zones. It does have private development, capitalist modes of production. But still, it is under the control of the Chinese state, which is led by the Chinese Communist Party. And this is very important for people to understand that there is a difference between the character of the Chinese state and the character of the United States imperialist state. And in viewing those relations, we have to keep that in mind. At the same time, even states like Russia, for example, which is no longer socialist, is attempting to enhance its relations with Africa as well as Latin America. The president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, recently made overtures to various countries in Latin America. Mm-hmm. So the United States is threatened by all of this. And even if countries are not socialists, even if countries still have internal domestic contradictions, and they are not perfect and they are not pure, they still find themselves in fundamental contradiction against the aims and objectives of U.S. imperialism. We see this vis-a-vis Russia. Well, right now, war is being threatened against Russia by the United States over control of the nation of Ukraine. So these are developments that are ongoing, and they are very dangerous in terms of the whole overall international situation. We want peace. We want development. We do not want nuclear war. We do not want another world war. And this struggle that is going on today on a global level threatens the potential of a major international conflagration, which can, in fact, encompass the majority of people throughout the world.
And we're just coming to the end of our time here. And, I mean, you raise a really good point. Like, this U.S.-Africa summit is not an isolated incident. It's not an isolated conference. It's very much part of world politics today. And that's an important thing that we need to keep in mind. Just to end our interview, there was a lot made during the summit. There was a lot made of the First Lady of Cameroon, Chantal Biya's hair. I tell you how many, news articles I read about her hair. And it surprised me, I guess. When she came to Washington, I guess we're surprised by her hair. And, she's very much a fashion setter and trendista. But so there's that kind of commentary. You know, I think she had a mullet or a mohawk or I can't even remember the style. But so on the one hand, there's like this... in a way, an exotification, in a way, a surprise that African women can be so stylish. And on the other hand, it's like, that Africa is stylish or whatever these kinds of news reports were trying to convey with this obsession. And of course, there's always been a historical obsession with the black woman's body. So I'm just, this Western white obsession with the black woman's body. So I'm wondering your take on this almost obsessive, news cycle with Chantal Biya's hair.
Yeah, that is true. There has been this historical obsession with African women on the part of, the U.S. Slave traders and slave masters and imperial dominant forces, even within those elements that collaborate, with the ruling class. Michelle Obama, her fashions, her arms, her armpits, the muscles on her arms, all of this becomes a preoccupation of the U.S. Corporate media. So it's not surprising that they would focus on this and not focus on the substantive issues involving United States-Africa relations. Paul Biya historically has been a friend of the West. So even their friends are not immune from this type of unfair stigmatization and other forms of obsession. So, you know, it's something that's part and parcel of the tabloid journalistic approach to covering Africa, but not only Africa, even African people inside the United States.
Great. Abiyume, I'd like to thank you for joining us again to help us deconstruct this U.S.-African summit. I think we even did this for the European summit. I can't remember. Anyways, you are officially our U.S. foreign correspondent. So thank you so much for joining us. And we'll definitely speak with you again.
I'm glad to serve in that role. And anytime you want to have a conversation, just give us a call.
Great. And before we let you go, Abiyume, can you tell people about the Pan-African Newswire and how they can sign up? This has been something that I've been subscribed to for very, very many years, and it's very helpful and very useful.
All you have to do is log on to panafricannews.blogspot.com. That's panafricannews.blogspot.com. And also, I'm on Facebook at Abiyume Azikiwe.
Great, Abiyume. Thank you very much for joining us again.
Thank you once again for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
And that was Abiyume Azikiwe, the editor of the Pan-African Newswire. The Pan-African Newswire is an international electronic press service designed to foster intelligent discussion on the affairs of African people throughout the continent and throughout the world. And as Abiyume had mentioned, if you want to sign up for the Pan-African Newswire, just check out panafricannews.blogspot.com. I think it was .blogspot.com.